What rewards might the faithful rightfully look forward to? Hello, welcome to The Good Word. I am David Thomas, the convener of this. This is our last lesson for the quarter. We've been looking all along at the idea of managing for the master until he comes. My conversation partners remain the same, Dr. Bruce Taves from the School of Business at Walla Walla University and Professor Brant Berglund from the School of Theology. So, gentlemen, the Bible talks about rewards and offers rewards for the faithful. And as we conclude this quarter, thinking about these, what are the rewards that might come readily to mind as we think about faithful Christian living? Any ideas from any of you?
My mind turns very quickly to Revelation. I spend most of my study time outside of my classes there. And the seven churches in chapters 2 and 3, each one of the churches from Ephesus all the way through Laodicea is granted a promise to the one who overcomes. And the promises are like rewards. And the rewards, as the churches go along from Ephesus to Laodicea, they kind of track from a decent church, Ephesus, to fairly bad with Laodicea, and that's a trend. But the opposite of that trend is the rewards. Each church is given a reward or more, and Ephesus starts with one reward, and Smyrna gets two, and Pergamum three, and so on. And they each get more and more until you get to the very end, and at Laodicea goes back to one. But the greatest reward is the granting to sit on the throne with Christ as he overcame and sat with his Father on his throne. The rewards to the churches are almost always spiritual blessings, the presence of God, to be a pillar in God's temple, to be acquitted of my accusations that have been made against me by the evil one. Beautiful blessings and rewards, and they are not physical rewards unless you want to see the holy city, the New Jerusalem, as physical. And even that pales in significance to having the presence of God with me.
So the greatest reward then would come from, would be the end result of the plan of redemption, where there's a reconciliation between God and humans, and the great gulf that was fixed by sin will be gone.
That what has divided us and kept us from full communion with God has been ended. The sin is gone, and that which divides us in the sanctuary in the Old Testament, the need for intercession, that intercession is gone. We can have face-to-face relationship with our Creator. That's a mind-blowing idea.
Mm. Yeah, you put a whole bunch of things together there. I was thinking of the gift of salvation has its rewards in this world as well as in the other one, and one of those is the whole matter of transformation. And I do spend time thinking about transformation, because the Bible speaks of transformation as something that unfolds in this life, that the lazy become industrious and the unbeliever becomes a believer and the drunkard becomes sober. I mean, all these kind of transformations. But there's also that one that occurs at the second coming of Jesus that Paul mentions in 1 Corinthians 15, where we'll be changed in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. And as I've thought about that, I'm looking forward to that day, because it seems to me on that day not only will physical infirmities be gone, but I think that the proclivity we have, the easy tendency we have to be fascinated by sin will disappear. You know, I tell my
That'd
students
nice.
Sometimes
oh.
that I preached a sermon once entitled, "How Much Can I Sin and Still Get to Heaven?" And I've been preaching for 40 years. It's hard for me to say that, but that's the only time I ever advertised a title where people came to find out before the sermon what it was all about. They were very interested. I had six people approach me before church wanting to know what I was going to talk about. How much can I sin and still get to heaven? That intrigues us as humans. That will be gone. What else?
God told Abraham, "I am your shield, and I am your great reward." The relationship alone is worth something, and that tells me that during this life, if my greatest asset is my friendship with the Creator, the relationship that I have with Him, everything else pales next to that. He knows I need the food and the clothing like we've talked about this quarter. He knows I need those things, and He may choose to bless me with more than that, maybe even some of the things I want if I'm careful with those wants, but ultimately He is my great reward.
Yeah.
And then He says, and you will then help others have that reward as well, because you'll be a blessing to the nations.
Yeah. I like also the idea of being granted entrance into a kingdom of righteousness where all the former things are passed away. You know, it's really heartbreaking to see the kind of inhumanity that human beings perpetrate against each other, the evil and deceitfulness and the brokenness of life. And, you know, when you work as a pastor, you get to see that. But anybody I think a policeman, you know, we ought to be very grateful to them for what they do, because they see a lot of the brokenness of society and people in the medical professions. But I love the idea that there's coming a kingdom where all of those things will be gone. There won't be evil there. There won't be adultery. There won't be theft. There won't be murder and so forth. And I'm reminded, one of the most difficult speaking appointments I ever had was in 2003. I was in the country of Zambia with some students. We were there helping with some evangelism. And I was asked to go and preach to a group of Tutsis and Hutus from Rwanda, where, you know, there was that terrible genocide. And this was a congregation of about 300 people who had decided that because they're Christians, they cannot allow the tribal differences to divide them. And so they were deliberately worshiping together. They were marrying across tribal lines. And I thought, and these were people who had watched relatives being hacked to death. They had fled for 6 months through the bush and come on, Zambia finally gave them a place to stay. And I thought, what am I going to say to these people, you know? Very difficult assignment. But the thing I remember the most is the choir sang. They had a choir that sang, and it was sang in a language I didn't understand. But partway through the song, a woman in the front row left the ranks of the choir and began going around and touching people on the face like this. And I thought, what is that all about? Well, the guy who was with me who translated, he says, well, they're singing a song they've written about the former things being passed away. There'll be no more tears. And she's pantomiming the wiping away of tears. And that struck me as a very powerful thing, that's what one of the rewards of the saints will be. Will be the living in a place where evil is gone. Not only will we not be interested in it, but it won't be there.
And that promise brings us peace and contentment and perspective now.
Yeah.
And I think that's important because, you know, in the trials and tribulations and storms of life, you know, having the long view allows us to prioritize what's important here and now with our money, with our possessions, with our relationships. I like a quote that George Bush Sr. said after being president. He said, life is great. He said, I make the food and Barbara makes the bed. We're right back to square one when we were first married at 20 years of age. Life is absolutely wonderful. I've concluded after having been president of the United States that it is family, friends, and faith that mean everything.
Yeah.
So the rewards of a relationship with God are, yes, out of this world, in the next world, but they're very much present in this world, in giving us peace, in giving us understanding, in giving us comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're going to add one more, Bruce, joy.
And joy,
yeah,
despite our possessions or lack thereof.
Yeah. Joy is a profound thing. That's a deep sense of satisfaction with life, even though it's going wild.
Well, and this the parable in Matthew 25 of the master who went on a journey but entrusted his goods to his servants and said, while I'm gone, manage these. And Bruce, I'd love to know from you if in business you've ever had been able to say to an employee, well done, you did a fantastic job with this, you know, you were entrusted with this, and what was their response? And the passage here, the master says to one of the servants who had, you know, put money in and invested and done something, he says, well done, good and faithful servant, you were faithful with a few things, I will put you in charge of many things. And then the idea of joy, enter into the joy of your master. You made me proud of you and happy for what you've done, and now I hope you're just as happy. Have you had experiences in business where you've been able to say that to an employee?
Oh, definitely. Affirming good work, and could be in many different ways, not just words, but you know, maybe a token of appreciation or something. An organization is only as good as the people that work there.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a positive, uplifting atmosphere is certainly part of the attraction of working in a place like that. So yes, when a supervisor or a master or someone recognizes a job well done, that is a beautiful thing.
I know my son at Home Depot, he gets what's called a homer. You know, that's kind of their mascot. And when you do something that goes over and above and a supervisor sees it, you get a homer. And after a few of those, your bonus goes up. You might get a token, like you said, of appreciation. He's received a watch, a fairly expensive watch for getting a number of these homers. And now it's become a source of pride for the workers there. It's like, now we're going to go over and above, not just to get the things, but because we see that it's value to our customers. And then he gets a sense of satisfaction for having done a good job. It's kind of a neat system.
That's funny. In high school, I worked on the farm on the campus. They had a farm, and the farm manager one day sent me to work on an old seed drill. It was made in Canada for planting wheat, and this was an old mechanical thing. It had no electronics. I mean, he told me it needed to be reworked and readjusted, and I spent quite a few days down there adjusting the wheels. Mm. And at the end of the planting season, he told the whole work crew, he applauded me. He said, well, I want to thank Dave for the work he did, because he said there was not a single breakdown for the whole planting season. And I remember how I felt very, very good about that.
Yeah.
You know, I want to add one more reward, and this one I think is a big one, and that is the restoration to life of those who have died before us who are believers.
Yeah.
You know, that if you've lost a loved one, this is a big one, that when somebody dies, it leaves a hole in life, and you don't really have anything there. I remember when my grandfather died, a much-loved man, and I drove away from the funeral, and I realized, wow, there's no more grandpa. There's only memories of him.
That's right.
And I felt like there's a hole there. There's no more new memories. It's just what was. And,
yeah.
You know, to think that that's the end of the story is very discouraging. But to realize that in the coming of the kingdom, one of the rewards will be that those who have died in faith will be restored. And you can imagine what heaven will be like, where all the people who you have known and loved who have died believing will be there, and they won't be going away. And so there's an element of wholeness and completeness that I think comes, and that completeness, as you said, involves restoration of human relationships, the restoration of relationship with God, no more separation, no more evil, no more trouble, no more sorrow, no more pain, no more dying, nothing like that. It'll be all gone. And so those rewards are fascinating, and we ought to think about them on an ongoing basis. I have noticed, by the way, that the people who have the most difficult circumstances in their life have the greatest hope of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who live comfortable lives don't think much about it.
Those anyway, who have been forgiven most love most.
Yeah. Gentlemen, thank you for your participation this whole quarter. I appreciate it. My thanks to Christian Bailey, our engineer, and my thanks to those of you who listen for the Good Word. I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.